gentlemen, boys and girls, and cats of all ages. It is now episode number 51 of the Development Hell Podcast, coming to you, if you're listening on the stream live, if not, you're listening to after the fact when Ed has gotten his act together, gotten out of the fetal position and edited the podcast. We've been together. Thanks so much for all the nice words that people had to say about the 50th one that we just did. I had a lot of fun with Ed going through all the old episodes. But the show goes on, and I'm starting to feel some pressure. Some of the other copycat podcasts that have sprung up inspired by our awesomeness are starting to catch up in total. So I guess Ed and I have to start recording more frequently. But this is episode number 51. I have with me, as always, Ed. Ed, are you there?
I am here, yes.
And I apologize for my voice. I think I'm working on a bit of a cold, so we'll have to see how that goes. I'm also about to go on vacation, so it's not good to be sick when you're about to go on vacation. I'm going down to Florida, so hopefully I catch some decent weather when I'm there.
Are you going on a permanent vacation like Aerosmith?
No, sir. But as a little segue before we get to the sponsors, Permanent Vacation was the first CD that I ever bought.
Is that right?
It is. I had been saving up money, and I guess I was almost 17, and we were moving from the house that I grew up in to where my parents live now. And before we moved, I got told I could take some of my money out of the bank that I'd been saving up, and I bought myself a TV, and I bought myself like one of those all-in-one stereo units that had tape deck and record player and a CD player in it. So I bought that, and I bought Permanent Vacation as my first CD.
So you were like 35?
Yeah, thereabouts, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah. 35, still living at home in the basement. Anyway, not much different from now. I'm down in the basement, and I can live. I guess I could live in here if I had to. If I act like a big enough asshole to my wife, I guess I could sleep on the couch permanently. Anyway, so why don't we get into our wonderful sponsors for tonight's podcast?
Sorry, I was laughing.
Yeah, I know you're laughing. Keep going, asshole.
All right. So we've got a couple sponsors. And the first is a new sponsor to Development Hell, and that's Offload.io. And I looked at their website, and I think it has something to do with shipping, like shipping lanes. I think it might have something to do with international piracy.
I think you're being slightly fooled by the awesomeness of the graphics. I think what Offload.io actually is about people basically contracting and subcontracting out work. It's like kind of like a trying to think of the best way to describe this, like a job board for electronic job board, where you have some work that you need somebody to do, short-term contracts, or you're doing freelance work, you need some help, so you want to subcontract out some of the stuff that you're doing. Looks like Offload.io is a invitation-only website for trying to match people who need small bits of freelance work done with people who are looking to do some freelance stuff. So it's brought to you by our awesome friend of the show, Lee Tenjum, out in, I know he's out in BC. I don't think it's Vancouver. I keep wanting to say it's in the Okanagan Valley somewhere. It only means something to the Canadians. Ed has no idea. It might as well be in outer space. But I do know Lee. He does Pancake App as his main gig, and he's trying to get this Offload.io thing up and going.
Yeah, and I think are all the jobs about pancakes?
I don't know. It would be kind of cool if they were.
Yeah, okay. Do you think there are pancakes in those boxes on the ship?
Well, hopefully they're like vacuum sealed so that it lasts when you're on a slow boat from China. You know, it takes a couple of weeks to make it across the Pacific. Hopefully they'll still be fresh when they pop out of the seal.
Do Canadians have their pancakes made in China, but they have their syrup like just tap a tree right outside?
No, there's humongous tariffs on imported pancakes, so we make them all domestically.
Oh, that's true. Yeah, isn't there like some kind of Canadian pancake content amount that you have to have?
Yep, 2 out of every 5 pancakes must be Canadian.
Okay, yeah, that makes sense. Yeah. All right. Yeah, so Offload.io, you go there, you join this little club, and I think there's like a password you have, and like everybody wears masks. And you took a taxi like way far out of the city, and you went to this mansion, and it says Offload.io, and they ask you for a passphrase, and somebody gave you a passphrase like it was written down on a piece of paper you found in somebody's coat, and you say it, and they let you in, and then it's just really weird, and you don't understand what's going on, and it's sort of like an erotic journey, but you don't know if you're supposed to be there, but everybody has a mask on, so nobody can see what's going on, and I think it's like that.
Aren't you confusing? That sounds like the plot for Eyes Wide Shut.
Yeah, that happens a lot, actually.
Is that a movie that you and your wife like to watch all the time?
We've watched it. I haven't watched it in a while, actually. It's a weird movie.
Set that one up for date night.
Yeah, we should have a date night.
Hey, honey, let's watch the cool orgy scene from Eyes Wide Shut.
Yeah. Let's watch this difficult marriage fall apart.
In real time.
Yeah.
Oh, no, that's not in the movie. That's just in the actual relationship. All right, keep going.
Yeah,
Who's the next sponsor?
Okay, the next sponsor is Eva Orr. Oh, wait, this is upside down. No, Rove is that's what is that? Rove.
Row Ave.
Row Avenue. Row Avenue. I thought it was like the. Isn't there a B-52 song named Rove? Like Rove where you want to.
No, that's Rome where you want to.
Oh, my bad. That's a good song, though. Do you. No, you're in the B-52s now, right?
Yes. Yes, I'm the new bass player.
Oh, that's pretty cool. Okay, so that must be fun.
It is a lot of fun.
I like that.
And I also work for Rove. Yes, they are my current employer.
I like that Rock Lobster song.
It's a good song.
So, Rove, I think, is a B-52s cover band. And my understanding is that they are playing a party at ZenCon?
Yes, we'll be working, not the main stage, but the backstage near the midway.
Oh, that's nice. So it's like a secondary stage.
Yeah.
That's nice. So the headliners are at the main stage.
Yes, headliners at the main stage.
Yeah, right.
And I'm also there working on my my solo stuff as well at ZenCon. Nice. It's like a spoken word slam poetry thing about testing. So could be kind of interesting. It's a little experimental. Fun. I'm gonna try it out.
Yeah, that sounds like a good time. That sounds like
That actually would be an awesome presentation, actually, to do slam poetry about testing. It's going to be different, and I think it's a talk I would only be able to give once.
They come at you with facades. You can't test those.
Yes, and call and response with the audience. It would be either be awesome or really awkward. I'm not sure which one.
My experience is usually that the audience does not like participating.
Well, maybe just the topics you want to go over, they don't feel like talking about because it makes them uncomfortable and facing certain truths about themselves. But we talk about Rove. Yes, Rove is my employer. Please say some more nice things about Rove, please, Ed.
Well, the people there are nice, and they are good with keyboards. They can type fast. They type up to 40 words per minute. So any kind of data entry that you need or spell checking or like dictation. So I think that's a new thing they're getting into where you record something on a cassette and then you can mail that to them at their P.O. box. And in 4 to 6 weeks, they will return you a letter up to one page. And there's an introductory rate of $9.95 for that. Also, they do PHP development. So if you have like a application and you're like, you know, this is doing okay, but it could be better. You know, we want it to be faster and maybe people will stop breaking into it eventually and things of that nature. And then you call in this team from Rove, and they come in with their typewriters and their punch cards, and they type things up, and then they get out the punch card things, and they get the punch card stuff, and they put that into your computer in the slots. Everybody knows, you know, computers have slots. And you put the cards in there. And then that optimizes the refactorability of your application.
You know, I had a hard time finding the punch card reader to micro USB adapter. It was pretty hard.
Yeah. It's that's the kind of special hardware that you get with Rove. They bring their own punch card reader. They have their own they have a truck that has like 4 20-inch CRT monitors on it, like on a flatbed. And they just come in and they work. And they just work outside. It's kind of weird, actually, because they stay out there like overnight. So they'll be there for like 2 weeks. And then they sort of set up a pup tent at night to just kind of be shielded a little bit from the elements. Anyway, so they're really, really good with PHP and also dictation. So if you have needs in either of those areas, you should talk to them.
And yeah, if you have extensive handwritten notes that you need transcribed, hit me up on Twitter and I'll hook you up with a promo code.
They can handle that for you.
All right, so enough about our sponsors because we've blown through their money already on strippers and steak. So let's get on to the reason why we have the show today. So today our extra very special guest is Dead Lugosi, otherwise known as Margaret Staples. Sorry to make you mute yourself for so long, Margaret.
That's all good.
I know you're probably funny. Well, unintentionally funny, as I like to call it. So we have Margaret on the show. I'm trying to think about why, because that's always the
It's cool. Ed and I got together and made a list before you got here.
I know. I was a little bit late. I'm just trolling. Margaret is going to be appearing at my awesome PHP-centric conference, True North PHP. She will be talking about Sensio 2. Oh, sorry, Symphony 2. And like all the guests that we have on, Margaret has a very interesting life. So we're going to force her to talk about what she does and just her thoughts and everything. Like we told her, it's pretty freewheeling. So we're just going to get right into it. Let me go look at the notes here. So as far as I can tell, based on your when I do a little bit of stalking/research, you are big on game programming. So, are you talking like desktop games or mobile games, or we're talking web only? Like, what's your preferred platform under which to develop games?
Well, I personally really enjoy writing big buckets of back-end logic, and then when I have to go make a UI, I kind of cry a little bit. And it's not because I don't like making visual things. I enjoy making visual things a great deal. It's just such a huge gear shift, and the demands for doing front-end stuff is so very different that I hate switching focus, and that's true for all things. I think I'd probably be really happy if I could just do one thing really well for 1,000 years before I had to switch, because I'm a control freak perfectionist like that. But like, given my background in web development, that's mostly where I've stuck. But one of the cool things about working with other humans is in addition to making the game I'm working on right now, I'm making the back end and I'm making a web client for it. But I'm also making an API that somebody else is making a Unity front end for it. So even though I have the limitations of how quickly I can learn things, I can package it up in such a way that somebody else can make alternate interaction mediums for it, which is very freeing, and I enjoy it a great deal.
So why don't you talk a bit about the game stuff that you're working on?
Oh, I would love to. I am making this game. It's called Brunelleschi, Age of Architects, and it's a social strategy city builder RPG set in the Renaissance. And it's free to play and totally in beta right now, and you should go play it. And it's located at brunegame.com. That's brunegame.com. Please play my game. And it's really awesome in that it has a lot of depth to it. I don't know if you ever played any BBS games like Legend of the Red Dragon or
Trade Wars, baby.
Awesome. Awesome. So you know how like games back before they had a lot of emphasis on graphics, they would give you all this content depth, like lots of stuff you could do so that you could play with your friends for a really long time without stopping.
Yep.
Like years. Well, that's kind of what I loved about gaming, as opposed to just like quick little reflex tests, which is fun too. It's just not how I got into the whole concept of gaming as an entertainment medium. So Brunelleschi is really much more about having a platform on which you can really dig in and play for a really long time without stopping. Like, and there's a lot of stuff you can pick from. Like, if you want to go adventure, you can go adventure, and if you want to, like, work on building an economy with other players, you can work on building or dominating an economy. If you, and you can work on government stuff, or you can work on role-playing stuff. I mean, there's just a lot to it, because that's what I like about gaming, is just having a whole lot of flexibility and stuff that you can really dig into mentally and interact with other people through that really complex and engaging medium.
So is the game set up to be like a long-running one, or can you play quick ones and restart? And what's your goal? Is it one of the things where you want people to sign up and play with your friends, and the environment and, you know, the game world is such that you can play over an extended period of time? Or is it more focused that distinct small little games and then just repeat and you can try
long.
Different
it's
stuff?
Very long. Yeah, very it's long. Very long play. The beta has been out since January. It's the exact same game world. Every settlement, which is what we call cities, because it's sort of the Renaissance concept of a city, which also includes like farming fields and the external roads and ports and that sort of thing. So we call it a settlement. But all of those are player built, and those take months and months to really build up a sizable. I mean, you start out with farms. If you want to start a brand new settlement with your friends, the first thing that you have is you have the fields district, and in that fields district you're going to want to make some farms, because when you're talking about building up civilization in the Renaissance, first thing first, you got to eat. But yeah, you grow these, you can grow these settlements if you're one of the government builder types over the course of years. Honestly, we haven't run it that long yet, but theoretically you could be building this settlement up with your friends over the course of years, and you've got total authority over local markets. You've got limited authority over the global markets. You can do personal trades. You can do diplomacy, and it's a lot of depth, and it's all about building civilization with your friends. Like, in a settlement, there's a sovereign who's the titular head of the organization, but that sovereign can honestly, at a certain size of settlement, kind of has to get some friends to take over districts in that settlement and govern those districts as ministers, because these things get so big and so complicated and there's so much to them. And I'm only like halfway done with the feature set. You can follow along with me and totally interact with me through the forums and kind of shape how the rest of the features get put into the game. But even with only about half of the features in the game, there's just a crazy amount of cool stuff to do.
All right. So, you know, you're going to have to comp me and Ed, and we'll do a Dev Hell settlement on there somewhere.
Yep.
Do it, please. Absolutely. That would be awesome. I would love to have you join in the mix, and it's totally free, so I don't have to comp you anything.
Yeah, didn't I report? I think I remember when you were first pushing stuff out, I reported a bug.
Then I love you forever, because bug reports are the best. I actually give out 10 platinum, which are the hardest. They're the hardest material in the game to get, because platinum is what you can trade the game for various resources. It's how we make sure that there never becomes a choke point that people can't get past, because you can always just pile up enough of one thing to exchange it to the game for some platinum, which you can then exchange for anything else in the game.
Oh, right.
And I give out 10 of those every week to someone who submits bug reports, because while we're in beta, bug reports are my favorite thing ever.
Wow, really?
Oh,
bug
yeah.
reports are usually my least favorite thing.
I love fixing things.
Well?
And then once they're fixed, I love it when things work.
Are we still there?
I'm
yes.
still here.
Did
I'm
you just
here.
Lose me, though?
No.
You got crackly.
I got crackly? Huh, weird.
You got crackly. You all got crackly. Sorry.
Well, that's cool that you like bug reports, though. I mean, somebody's got to like it, I guess. Did you ever play this game, Merchant Prince?
Oh, maybe we did lose Margaret.
Uh-oh.
How about now? Have you lost me now?
Hey, you're back.
Yay, I'm back.
What happened?
I fiddle with things that are in my hands, and what was in my hands was the mute control.
Oh, I do that. I totally do that big time.
Yeah, I get nervous and I talk too much and I fiddle with things with my hands. Sorry.
No. Talking too much is not a problem. But probably hitting mute might be an issue if you can't hear you.
So the bottom line is Brunelleschi, Age of Architects is it turn-based?
Brunelleschi, Age of Architects, and it's not really, it's it's not really turn-based. I want to say it's timer-based. Because, like, you have action points that you can spend on various things, and those action points regenerate kind of constantly, but it takes about 12 hours for them to completely come back if you spend them all the way down to zero. So in that way, your interaction with the game is time-controlled, but there's not a specific turn.
Way to go getting the name wrong, Chris.
It's Brunelleschi, Age of Architects. And Brunelleschi was a real human being.
Like I said, yep. Brunelleschi, Age of Architects. No, Brunelleschi.
I mispronounced it for like the first year that it was named that. We actually had had a player correct us.
The
correct answer to the player is fuck you. This is how it's pronounced. And you just go with it and say,
I'm not sure that you have a strong player relationship spirit in you.
Yes.
That hurts. That really hurts.
So, I asked, did you ever play this game called Merchant Prince? It's an old DOS game from like the early 90s.
And I said no, and then asked if it was awesome.
Okay, yeah, I didn't hear any of that. That's a shame.
I didn't hear it either. So it didn't happen.
Yeah, but anyway, it is awesome, and you should try to play it. I think they have it on GOG.com. Let me see if I can find it. Just play something in the background while I'm looking for this.
You should really make singing part of your presentations. I think it would add something.
I think you're right.
No, there's a reason Ed's music is instrumental.
Yeah, that's very true. Let's see here. Oh, there was also, I think there was sort of a re-release of it called Machiavelli the Prince. That was sort of like a redone version of it.
Yeah, I've read the book based on that game.
Oh, yeah, that is. It's a great book, isn't it? I like to see it when they expand a universe.
I prefer the original in Italian. Erp, derp, derp. All right, enough about Margaret. Jesus Christ. Let's go on to the next topic here. Also, Trade Wars is something I played back in the day on BBSs. And talk about the old school games. One of the games that I really, really enjoyed playing pre-internet was for the Apple computers, a game called Wizardry. I don't know if Ed's ever heard of that.
Of course. That's one of the most famous RPG series.
I loved that game. And I remember a buddy of mine who played it had this awesome like cheat guide but it was more like telling you where to find things inside the game, but not like you actually had to play out the game in order to win at it. So it wasn't like cheat codes that would give you. These people were smart who made the game, and they put cheat codes in there so you could like create ultimate characters and stuff. But you still actually had to play out the game. You couldn't give yourself like indestructibility or anything. So I remember he showed me the book, and then I remember finding there was a coupon in the back of the book, so you could order another copy of it. So I remember I went to the I went to the post office and actually got a money order. And then like sent the money order away and waited like 6 to 8 weeks for this book to show up. And then I remember the book showing up and I was like, this is fucking awesome. And playing Wizardry with the cheat codes. It was awesome. So Wizardry is a cool game. I wonder if you probably find it these days with an emulator to play.
Oh, yeah, totally. Yeah. You know, and they did a bunch of Wizardry games.
Yep. So. I seem to remember like three of them or something. But this is
there were at least nine.
I'm pretty sure that I played an emulator of Wizardry 8.
Yeah, because I'm trying to say, when I played it, it was like I was in like grade 6, 7, and 8. So that's a long, long time ago when I was like 12, 13, 14 years old. So that's like 30 years ago. So it was pretty awesome, though. Late 70s.
Wizardry. I remember it had those neat like line drawing 3D graphics in it,
too. Yep. I mean, I think Wizardry today could be like a really awesome like mobile game.
Agreed.
Yeah, it could.
You could do those kind of 3D line graphics wouldn't be too taxing for the Cray computer masquerading as an iPhone that I have sitting next to me. I have my iPhone 6 and I got a case for it too, so now it's somewhat protected.
You're too tasking.
Yeah, I know.
I don't know what that means.
I know.
Anyway, yeah, I have a lot of video games and old computers.
Yeah, I remember. Actually, the episode where you talked about the emulation stuff was actually one of my favorite ones that we've done.
Those good times. I'm looking right now, and I've got a bookshelf, and one shelf just has Intellivision games on it.
Did I ever on that episode? Did I tell you what me and my buddies did in high school with Intellivision basketball? Did I ever tell you about that?
No.
Okay, so we can talk about just a little. Just sorry, Margaret. Just a little diversion before we get on before we get on to Strange Loop. What we used to do during the NCAA basketball tournament, a bunch of us would get together one weekend towards the end, not quite when it was the Final Four, but probably the weekend before that, and we would play out the NCAA tournament using the Intellivision basketball game. It was like a 3-on-3 thing. And so what you could do is you could actually set up teams and set budgets, and you could purchase players within the game. So we sat down and figured out that a one seed would get these many dollars and a two, a three, and all that stuff. So we could actually try to handicap the teams, and we would play out the whole tournament, like stay up to like 3 in the morning, fueled on like pop and pizza, and play all 63 games.
Wow.
Yeah.
So you were like 35 when that?
No, I was in my early 40s when I did that.
Okay. That's
yeah.
cool.
Yeah. So let's get on to the next topic. Other than Ed's killing me today, I think he's just giving it to me because I was late for recording today. So the next thing we want to talk about was Strange Loop. So Strange Loop, for those that don't know,
that's a Depeche Mode song, right?
It is Strange Loop, crazy old languages, Strange Loop. And I was doing like Rick Astley type of hand motions and dancing in my Herman Miller Aron chair while I was doing it. Actually, I'm still kind of, now I'm doing the hustle. It's actually kind of, it's kind of a scary visual.
That is not what Dave Gahan does.
No, not a chance. So Strange Loop is a conference that's, I think this is the third year that they've done it. I think. Third or fourth. Yeah. It's in St. Louis, Missouri. And basically, it's a conference that, and Margaret can correct me because she's actually been to one of these things, is about programming languages mostly, and not really mainstream ones. I mean, I know that the first time I ever heard of Clojure was from a presentation that Rich Hickey did at Strange Loop. That was recorded, and that was my first exposure to the genius that is Rich Hickey, and he continues to blow my mind with all his presentations, and I look at all the stuff and I'm like, yeah, I just do PHP. This kind of sucks, actually. So,
what's he ever built? Yeah, well, has he built a website?
He just built the whole language, a Lisp language that sits on top of the JVM, and he built Datatomic, which is this cool little database thing. And now he's talking about transducers, and that's all this other shit that doesn't matter when you're doing templates for websites. Not that I'm bitter. I know that you did a blog post about Strange Loop, because yes, I do stalk our guests. So
yay!
So talk to us about Strange Loop, like kind of your experiences with it. Because to me, there's kind of two stories, two parts that I think are interesting. I think number one is kind of what you saw at Strange Loop. But I think for me, and the main reason to get you on here, actually, despite my proclamation of earlier ignorance, is about how you were treated at Strange Loop, which I think is the much more important story.
Awfully. Thanks for coming.
All right. Well, first of all, I want to mention that the only reason I got to go to Strange Loop is because they did these diversity scholarships this year, and I found out that they were doing this thing, and the whole reason that I am not at conferences 24/7 is because, well, I wouldn't be able to finish my game, and that would be a bummer. But also, I can't afford it. Mm-hmm. Now, maybe tomorrow, some 10 billionaires will each throw down $1 million on backing my game, and I will never have to worry about financial troubles ever again. But until then, I only get to do things that other people choose that I get to do, which can be a bummer. But Strange Loop offered these diversity scholarships, and I put myself out there, and I was like, hey, this is me. I can afford to help with none of this. Also, I'm disabled and have all these physical limitations, which you may very well find to be impossible to accommodate. Enjoy. And actually, what I heard back from them was, we really want you to be there. And that was the first thing that was awesome, was not just, we will see what we can do, but we want you to come to our conference. And then I was asked all sorts of much more penetrating questions about my physical condition and the very literal limitations that I have to deal with day in, day out. And then after I had done this email exchange with Bridget, who is amazing and did fabulous work coordinating this whole diversity scholarship thing, she got back to me with this list of offered accommodations, which were so far above and beyond anything that I would have ever found within myself to ask for, that I was just floored right there. And it really just kept being that level of them beating my expectations. When it was getting up to the date of the conference, she got back in touch with me. She made sure I had maps. She made sure I had contact information for her. She made sure I had contact information for other people who were coordinating. She made sure I had all the information about my driver who would pick me up at the airport and ferry me between my accommodations at the hotel and events that I was attending for the conference itself. And that was so amazing for me because being physically disabled, I deal with a lot of chronic pain. Things that are perfectly easy for other people to deal with are like climbing a mountain for me. And right. So just getting on a plane and going to a place that I'm not familiar with, filled with people that I don't know, and just putting myself entirely in the hands of strangers is a scary thing, but it was handled. Bridget handled the interaction with me so amazingly well and generously and thoroughly that I actually felt confident getting on that plane and putting myself entirely in other people's hands for a week. And then when I got there, it was just so amazing. I was treated so well. The people coordinating the event treated me really well. And I'm also going to say the people working, like, they gave a heads up to the people that were working at the hotel. They gave a heads up to the people that were working the Opera House, which was the event location for the conference itself. And all of the people working in those places, maybe St. Louis is just awesome, maybe just the relationship between the conference and these businesses were just awesome, but the employees treated me well. They checked in with me. Is there anything you need? Can we help you at all? How are you doing? How are you feeling? Can I carry that for you? It was just really above and beyond. I was so well taken care of while I was there that I was simply floored. And every time I tried to assert, thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you for giving me this opportunity, thank you for taking such good care of me, every single time I was countered with, no, thank you for coming. Thank you for coming. Thank you for coming. Until eventually I just had to say, you're welcome. and just go off and enjoy myself, because they just beat my expectations more than I could have possibly imagined. And that just left me to enjoy the learning and socializing experience of the conference to the maximum of my very limited capabilities without having to stress about, am I being in people's way? Am I going to be trapped? Am I going to end up having to burden someone? It was made very clear to me that accommodating me was a matter of course, not a burden. And that was overwhelmed. I don't know if you guys have any experience with yourselves or other people being physically disabled, but most of the time, you're an unwelcome burden. So this was such a reversal of my normal day-to-day experience that it was definitely a little bit of heaven. It was freaking awesome.
Wow, that's great. That's really interesting. Huh.
I enjoyed it.
That's really cool. I have found I have often have had those feelings emotionally, but not not because of a physical issue, but you know. I guess it becomes physical if it manifests, you know, things, but it's usually anxiety issues. And I was like, boy, that kind of sounds like some of the things that I know I get at least a little bit scared of, mm-hmm. you know.
One of the things they did that really touched me was they arranged for me to have my own green room backstage, to where when I was overcome with the pain, I could retreat into my own little private space, like literally a little private room with an attached bathroom where I could just go hide and lay down on my back pad until I was up to being around people again. And they thought of that. I didn't think of that. They thought of that, and they just offered. And I made use of that throughout the conference, and it did good to my heart. I'm going to let you know. It was just amazing.
Well, shit, that's really awesome.
Right?
Yeah. That's
and
great.
Not to mention, the talks were amazing and the attendees were amazing. But you can know that going in. You can read the list and go, oh, wow, that is some amazing content. And you can look at the people attending and go, oh, wow, those are some fun people. But for me, having that place made there for me so that I could take advantage of all that automatic goodness was wicked special.
That's really great.
Yeah.
That's really great. So you're going to be let down by True North.
I don't think so. Chris has already let me know that he is personally going to show for me around to make sure that I can get from point A to point B, which is pretty freaking special.
Nice.
Yeah.
Do you think he's still on the call?
I hope so.
Why, where else would I be?
I don't know. I thought maybe you fell asleep or something.
No, why would I? Wow. That's nice, Ed.
No, he just didn't say anything for a while.
I'm just listening. It's, again, this show's about the guest. It's not about me ranting and raving. I can do that anytime with zero audience. So
The show's about what the guest says, and then me saying, oh, yes, that reminds me of something about me, and then me talking about me. That is what the show's about.
Me, and more about me. Enough about me. How do you like my dress?
Yeah, exactly.
That's from an old, I remember years ago, back when they still actually had the Yellow Pages, and it was actually a big deal. They used to have television commercials about the Yellow Pages, and then one time they had some people there, had a whole bunch of people at some party, a bunch of really like self-absorbed people, like, oh, you know, my second Maserati's in the shop, and this one woman's talking to someone, says, well, enough about me, how do you like my dress? And then they stop, and then they stop everything, and then they put on letters on the thing, bing, vanity cases.
What?
Vanity cases? People who are vain? The person talking not be dressed?
I get you. What's that have to do with the Yellow Pages?
Yellow Pages, you could find things. So they're saying you want to find vanity cases.
Like you want to find somebody who's vain?
Oh, Edward.
What's going on?
Like vanities for bathrooms?
Oh,
I thought you were talking about. I haven't seen one of those in like a million years. But yeah, back when I lived in Texas, basically every adult woman I knew had one of those things.
Yep.
And they would say things like, I have to put my face on, and then they would grab this little case and they'd go off to a bathroom. And so I just imagined as a child growing up that they had faces in there.
Yeah, it's skinned off other people.
Totally.
Who was the guy who did that? Was that Ed Gein?
Oh, which of the serial killers that would make things out of people's skin?
Yeah, I think Ed Gein did that. Didn't he make a face?
He made lamps. He made lamps out of skin.
That's right. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. Let me see if I can find out.
He was part of the inspiration for.
He didn't have a very healthy relationship with his mother.
He didn't have a healthy relationship with anybody, as far as I can tell from his history. Didn't they kind of base the Buffalo Bill character from Red Dragon, you know, the book before Silence of the Lambs? They kind of based him on Ed Gein a little bit.
I wouldn't be at all surprised.
I think it was. But Strange Loop. It's one of those conferences I've looked at that always looks like it'd be really out there and covering a bunch of stuff that is actually extremely different from what I do in my own day-to-day work. But it's always like, man, it's far away. It's in St. Louis. And, of course, to fly anywhere from Canada is super expensive. And these days, the only way I go to conferences are is if someone else is footing the bill. So it makes it kind of awkward. Usually I speak or to be really narcissistic, I created my own conference so I could go to one without traveling far. So Strange Loop does look really interesting. Like I said, my big thing has always been was that like Rich Hickey. That's where I discovered who Rich Hickey was by watching his videos about closure and his approach on solving problems. Like he actually just it sounded like whatever he had done in his life, he had set himself up pretty good because he was able to actually before he started working on closure, he basically spent a year thinking. I mean, he would like sit there and sketch things out and talk about how he kind of wanted things to work and spent a whole year so that when the time came for him to actually implement closure, he had almost all the work done already.
Man, that sounds so cool. I wish I could spend a year thinking about everything I ever had to do.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of alternative lifestyle is not the correct phrase, but a friend of mine that I know, his name is Joe Rainsberger. I know that some of the people who I follow on Twitter also follow Joe because I retweet his stuff all the time. And
we're tired of it.
Yeah, I know. Well, you know, you're free to unfollow anytime you want. Joe has set himself up quite well, and he actually does serial retirement. He will, like, he owns a house outright, so he's not paying a mortgage. And he just basically, instead of choosing to retire at age 65, he set it up so he works for a while and then retires for a while and then works and then retires, works and retires and just oscillates between those two states.
I think if you can't find a job that you love as if it's a vacation, that the work and then retire and work and retire thing is brilliant. That's a brilliant way to make sure that you're still loving life.
Yeah, because he's into the testing side of things, but he's more like a Java and Ruby side of things and agile and he's agile and Scrum stuff. But yeah, that's because I've had a few conversations with him about this stuff. And yeah, basically he sets it up. He's like, he knows how much money he needs to live the type of life that he and his wife want to lead. And he just, what he does, he goes and works. And usually he goes over to Europe. Because that's one of the neat things about I don't know if the same rule applies for the U.S., but for Canadians, you can go over to Europe and work for 6 months without needing a work permit, for up to 6 months without needing a work permit. So Joe will set – I keep wanting to call him Joey because when I first knew him, I knew him by Joey. He was in the same simulation baseball league with me back in the late 1980s. So that's how I kind of met him initially. And then we reconnected 20 years later via the power of the internet. So he knows exactly how much money he needs to do the lifestyle that he wants. So he'll just go work over in Europe for 6 months giving workshops and training and stuff. And then he's like, all right, I got enough money. And then they come back home. He lives in PEI. So come back to Prince Edward Island and he relaxes for however many months he feels like relaxing and doing nothing. And then gets back on the train again, does teaching, does all this stuff, and then comes back home and relaxes again.
Bro.
So what will he do in the coming apocalypse?
Coming? You mean the many apocalypse that are on us at the moment?
Yeah, so, I mean, it's a hell of a plan, and I would love to figure out how to make that happen for me, much to the consternation of my employer, I guess. But it is a very interesting perspective.
Screw you guys.
Yeah, screw Evan and Rove. I just want your money. I don't care. And just the thing with Rich Hickey kind of made me.
I totally saw him. He was at the conference.
Yeah, because he gave another talk. He talked about transducers, which is, again, a concept that I don't think is at all possibly applicable to PHP just because of the way PHP behaves. But yeah, so this idea of like, it's really, you know, to set yourself up so that you can like work a bunch and then relax, work a bunch and then relax. And I think people look at it as like kind of a lazy way, but actually I think it requires a ton of discipline to actually pull it off, to get everything lined up, get your money lined up, and just get everything lined up so that you can say, yep, I'm going to work and then I'm just going to relax and do things that I feel like doing, if it's travel or whatever, and then I'll go back to work again. And I often wonder if that's something I can make happen. I often plan for my future, and my plans I write things down and they get scrapped all the time. It's how I deal with anxiety and angst in my life, by planning the future and figuring out what I want to do and then figuring out how to get there. I don't know if other people deal with their stress. I know lots of people drink or do drugs or you know, get involved in abusive relationships. But for me, the way I deal with my own anxiety is planning my future, however weird that sounds.
That doesn't sound weird to me at all. That sounds like exactly how I deal with my stress.
what were you guys saying?
So if you wanted to sum up Strange Loop for people, like, you know, if people are saying, you know, convince me about why I should set aside a week of my time and a bunch of my own money to go to a Strange Loop.
Okay, well, that comes in two parts, because first of all, if you are female, a person of color, or are disabled, you don't have to set aside a bunch of your money. You can just apply for their diversity scholarship, and you totally should if you are in any of those categories, because, oh my freaking glorious, it's the reason anybody should want to get to go to this thing is because it's not a narrow viewpoint. I've attended two symphony conferences and they were amazing because I learned a bunch about symphony, which is something that I use every day, and that is crazy valuable. But Strange Loop is valuable basically for the opposite reasons, because it's going to expose you to a bunch of really smart ideas that have nothing to do with anything that you've done 10,000 times before. And that's going to wrinkle up your brain in new ways, and you are going to benefit from that if you do any sort of creative thinking as part of your day-to-day work, because just being exposed to new ideas, new concepts, new ways of doing things, new ways of problem solving that you'd never run into before, that's just going to limber up your brain and make it better at making creative jumps in the future. And wow, the people are also all brilliant and full of all sorts of knowledge that you just want to crack their skulls open and drink it down. It's awesome.
So are we talking about serial killers again?
Yeah, well, you brought it up.
That's cool. We can talk about that all day, dog.
That and really? That and Bigfoot. We could do a whole podcast about serial killers and Bigfoot.
Shit, you got to bring me back on for that one. I don't know a lot about Bigfoot, but I actually know a thing or two about serial killers because I went through kind of a serial killer phase where I was learning all about that all the time for no good reason.
Okay, for purposes of plausible deniability, please don't say anything more on the podcast about your habits and serial killer stuff. I don't want to get subpoenaed, please.
It's not a phase, that's a lifestyle choice. What are you talking about?
Killing people's a lifestyle.
No, you're just into people who kill people.
That's the weirdest kink ever.
Well, it depends on if you're into people.
Not all intellectual interests are also sexual interests.
Of course they are. Don't deny it. Oh,
so you're sexually attracted to testing? That's really weird.
That's right.
In the right context.
How could I have kept at it for so long if that wasn't the case?
Okay, I guess whatever works for you, man.
Like with everything else now, I'm getting desensitized to a lot of test cases. It's got to get more and more extreme with every passing day.
Oh, man, you sound like, do you ever see, well, if you haven't seen it, this isn't going to make any sense, but there's this, there's a really good documentary called Beyond the Mat about professional wrestling. It genuinely is interesting, I think, even if you're not into pro wrestling. It's actually pretty darn interesting. It's old, so I mean some of the things have changed and stuff. But like they have a fairly long segment on Jake the Snake Roberts, who you may remember from the 1980s, famous wrestler.
Yes, Jake the Snake. Yep.
And it is about the most depressing thing you're ever going to see. And he goes on this rant like about how marriages fall apart because he's on the road all the time, and it like keeps upping the stakes, if you know what I mean, and shit like that. And he's
seen that Darren Aronofsky movie? It's kind of like that.
The rest of it?
Yeah, yes. It's, mm-hmm. It reminded me a lot of like that stuff where, no, that's real life for these guys. For like, yeah, yep. Especially the Jake the Snake shit. And he's like he actually smokes crack on like fucking camera shit. Yeah, it's called Beyond the Mat. I believe the entire thing is on YouTube. So you should, but it really is interesting.
But at least though, in the case of Jake Roberts, he actually has gotten his life together.
He's doing okay.
He's managed to get hooked up with Diamond Dallas Page, another former wrestler, and Dallas Page has built himself a little personal fitness empire through. He started doing yoga. His wife got him doing yoga after Page had a serious back injury from wrestling. It got him back into shape because Diamond Dallas Page is also a very interesting story. He got involved in professional wrestling at a really late age. He was in his mid-30s when he finally got some success, which is usually like 10 years later than everybody else, at least. And so he started doing yoga, and he got all his core body strength back. And so he had so much success that he's turned around and he was helping some of his former friends from the circuit get their lives back together. So he helped out Jake Roberts and Scott Hall, another wrestler who was in WCW and WWF and all that stuff, where he played Razor Ramon among some of his other roles. And he was Scott Hall when he was in WCW with the other guy, Ken. What the hell is his name now? The other guy. His other partner all the time. Big, tall guy with always long hair. I just can't remember his name. Anyway, doesn't matter. So Diamond Dallas Page has helped out Scott Hall and Jake Roberts. It was an interesting segue over to talk about Beyond the Mat. Yes, the realities of being a professional wrestler are terrible. These guys abuse themselves all in the name of entertainment, which is... We kind of abuse ourselves on this podcast too, but not physically anyway, just emotionally, mm-hmm. just emotionally and mentally. Okay, so Strange Loop, yes. Because, you know, it's definitely, if you're the type of person that believes you should go to conferences about in the same kind of field that you work in, but on topics that you don't normally deal with, then yes, it looks like Strange Loop would be something that would definitely open your mind to interesting new possibilities. I mean, it sounds like you had a hell of a time, Margaret.
oh my goodness, it was so much fun. Joe Armstrong talked about the mess of programming, and there were a bunch of incredible talks. But like for me, it was really weird going. I don't know, geek starstruck. Like, I kept being like, oh my gosh, I know who that is. Like, and that's what actually happened to me with Rich Hickey. I was in a different talk. I accidentally left my schedule in my hotel room the first day. So I'm like having to like borrow other people's phones to figure out where I need to be next and stuff. And I don't have the schedule in my mind. And I'm in this talk and there's this guy in the audience. I'm like, I know that guy. Why do I know that guy? Because I don't know anybody here. Why do I know that guy? And then the talk ends and he keeps raising his hand and asking questions. I'm like, and eventually I'm just like, I know that guy because that's Rich Hickey. That's why I know him, because I have watched like half a dozen YouTube videos about this guy with this guy explaining things to me. That is why I knew that it is. So like that was my geek celebrity moment. I was just overcome, like, oh my God. Yeah. There was. And then later I embarrassed myself by going up and introducing myself to him and telling that story.
I think that's awesome. That's exactly the story you should tell.
I know that when I'm at conferences and people come up and talk to me, I always tell them that I always tell them, like, don't get creeped out just because you're talking to a speaker, because I think people get really weird and they don't want to, and they get reluctant to approach people at conferences. So I always tell them, don't get creeped out. I said I'm here as the conference, same as you. I just happen to be speaking. That's all.
One of the things that was cool was because I was part of the diversity scholarship, they shipped me in for the whole pre-day, which meant that I was in the halls and mixing with people before the big, scary, oh my goodness, I'm never around this many people conference started. And mm-hmm. Then there was the party the night before. I ended up like getting to know several people that it turned out later were speakers, but I didn't know that when I was getting to know them, and so it wasn't really that big a deal, and that was kind of awesome.
Did you ever just like wander up on stage while they were talking?
No, but almost. I had been there. I had several really amazing conversations at the Strange Loop party the night before the official conference started. And one of the people I had talked to, they're like, hey, catch me at breakfast. We can keep talking. And then I hadn't seen them at breakfast. And so the whole time, for a day and a half, I'd had my eyes open for this person that I wanted to keep talking to. And then I walk into a talk that I had been really looking forward to seeing. It was The Internet of Things in Practice. It was a really great talk. And there, standing behind the podium, is the woman I've been looking for a day and a half, about to give her talk. And so nice. I kind of walked straight up to the podium. I'm like, oh my God. And like, I bubbled at her enthusiastically for a second. And she was like, lunch is right after this. Let's go to lunch after this. And then I sat in the front row and we went to lunch afterwards. And that was awesome. So yeah, kind of. I almost wandered up onto the stage to talk to someone.
That's wonderful.
I had a great time.
That's good. I know my ego often likes people talking to me when I'm speaking at a conference, but I quickly get over that part.
Yeah.
Because I'm like, oh, God, somebody else wants to talk to me. Hey, how's it going?
You got to bring your A game, dude.
That's right. I try to bring my A game all the time at conferences. I just realized, Ed, I was thinking about this the other day. I think I'm coming up very soon on having given 100 talks in total.
Wow.
I think I'm very close to that.
Ugh, that is so boring.
Does that mean that you're about to be syndicated? Is that how that works?
Yeah. No, if I'd recorded all of them, I'd be syndicated. It means maybe I need to stop talking at conferences, I think is what it means. It's starting to cut into my magic gaming, so I'm not sure anymore.
Yeah, right. You should just tour the circuit.
That's right. We're going to do the Catskills next year. All right, so we're looking to think. Oh, one more. So talking at True North PHP. Yes, for those who aren't sick of me talking about it yet, my wonderful PHP-centric conference, True North PHP, is coming up in a couple of weeks. Actually, just a month and a bit, I would think. What day is it today? The 2nd?
The 1st.
Is it the 1st of October today? I'm sorry, because my calendar still is on September on the wall. Yes, November 6th, 7th, 8th. If you are in the greater Toronto area, or within, I don't know, let's call it 4 hours drive of Toronto, you should come to my conference. It is the only PHP-centric conference in Canada. If you're in the West Coast, fly on out. Tickets are still cheap. We just ended our early bird, so ticket prices have gone up. You can check things out at truenorthphp.ca. Three-track three tracks of awesomeness. We treat our speakers really, really well, as Margaret is going to find out since she is going to be speaking. You know, it's quite a small conference. It'll probably be close to 110 to 120 people, plus our speakers. So third year that I've been doing it. Things were looking kind of dire early, but a few sponsors have stepped up to smooth things over. So I won't be having to sell any of my magic cards to cover overruns. So this is good.
This is good.
Thank God. That's right. And I'm looking forward to seeing a bunch of my friends and making new friends and just, watching people get knowledge dropped on them, which is always fun. That's the reason I like doing these things is I know people have talked about this. There's the dark network of programmers, which are, I think if you look at them, what would you say the percentage of people of like working programmers that go to conferences and like participate in the communities surrounding their tools of choice? What would you think it is? 1%, 2%? Think it's higher? Think it's lower?
I think it's 1 or 2%.
Yeah. What about you, Margaret? What's your guess?
I don't know.
Well, it's okay. You don't have to have an answer. Well, yes, you do, but you don't have to have one.
Figure it out.
That's right. So, I mean, it's interesting when I think about it. I pour all this energy into community outreach and conferences, both organizing them and speaking at them, to try to reach a really narrow group of people. I don't know. It's 1%, all this work for the 1% elite of a particular community. I often wonder... I struggle to figure out good ways to engage more people, to get more people. I guess it comes down to like caring about the craft of doing the job of, I mean, for me, programming is a career for me and something I enjoy doing. And I know there are lots of people for whom the programming is just a job. They come in at 9, they leave at 5, and they're using their job to fund the life that they want to lead, which is fine. Zero, absolutely nothing wrong with that job. For those that want more, that's where getting involved in the community and conferences and stuff, I think, really kicks in as a way to kind of make yourself better. I think it would be extremely difficult to kind of level up your skills as a programmer without being in contact with other people who are looking to do the same thing.
I guess it's hard for me to say because I have had so little exposure to programmers who are not active, self-identifying members of the community, of the greater community. And once you're talking about somebody who self-identifies as part of the community, you're talking about someone who enjoys learning new things, who enjoys like connecting with other people in their industry. And so I've gotten a very skewed view. I went from not even knowing that there was such a thing as a community to basically having that be my main interaction with other programmers because I don't have a job. I have a bed that I am confined to at a laptop that allows me to contact the outside world. And so I don't know any workaday programmers. I don't know anybody that programs because they punch a clock. I only know programmers that are a little bit passionate about it. And so that totally skews my view of the world.
Hmm. That's interesting.
I mean, I've worked with people for whom programming was just the 9-to-5 thing. And didn't even, you know, wouldn't touch a line of code outside of work hours and didn't do personal projects on the side or get involved in stuff like that. And it seemed weird to me because that's not how I am because I enjoy this sort of stuff. So it always kind of made me feel weird, you know?
Yes, definitely. I don't know how I would talk to somebody who was just like, yeah, I code for a living, but I don't really care about it. I'd be like, how do you do that? how do you stay up on your game enough to get better all of the time if you don't care about it? And they're like, get better all the time. And I'm like, oh, we are aliens. I cannot communicate with you.
Yeah. I think it's interesting because I think this is one of not a whole, well, I guess, I don't know. I guess I just see a lot of people who aren't, say, developers, who they have jobs, but they aren't necessarily particularly passionate about it, you know? And, like it's something that they would do all the time anyway, you know? I often don't see a whole lot of that. And I think one of the things I realize is that I feel really lucky that I get to do something that I enjoy doing, and I happen to live at a time that it's a valuable enough skill that people are willing to pay a decent amount of money for if you're halfway good at it. You know what I mean?
Oh, heck yeah. Yeah. And I think people that are passionate about coding should remind themselves every so often how lucky they are to have a craft that they can be passionate about and be paid for, because, you know, that has a lot to do with the luck as to where you were born in space-time.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Absolutely. Absolutely.
Well, that's enough about talking about True North PHP, I think. I encourage people to come.
Oh, except that everyone, no matter where they live, should totally buy tickets and go, because I'm giving my first conference talk, and I'm very excited about it.
Yes. What are you going to talk about?
I'm going to talk about the Symfony 2 framework, and basically I'm going to attempt to sum up everything that you need to know in order to develop with the Symfony 2 framework into the confines of my talk.
Oh, that sounds interesting.
Yeah, it sounds like a pretty ambitious plan for your first talk.
Well, I've already given this talk at my quote-unquote local PHP meetup. It's actually 3 hours away from where I live, but it's the closest PHP meetup to me, and the people that run it are stupendously awesome, so they let me practice my talk in front of the group, and they say it went really well. So I am confident that I will at least manage to convey a little bit of knowledge, which is the goal.
Yeah, why you gotta be such a bummer, Chris?
It's how I'm wired.
Yeah, that's fair.
It's the brand, man. He can't not be grumpy.
Man, you know, I get all the time, Chris, you're not so grumpy in person. But like, I think I got to punch somebody out at a conference once just to set the tone properly.
Yeah. We could fake it and make something happen.
I used to blow up at the conference, yeah.
There you go. When I took care of kids, back when I was more physically mobile, I spent a lot of time working with kids because I love that, because teaching people things that want to know things is an awesome experience. I used to teach theater fighting because it's a skill, and boys 6 to 12 adore this skill and will basically follow any obedience rules and learn anything you want them to learn if you will teach them stage fighting. And yeah, I used to do that a lot. So if you want to fake something up, we could have a massive throwdown at one of the conferences. It could be huge. It could be awesome. I can teach you how to use lightsabers. That's what I'm saying.
Well, that sounds pretty cool.
It does sound interesting. I'm just, it's prisoner of branding. Sometimes I get upset when people meet me and I do favors for people and people are like, oh, Chris isn't so grumpy. I'm like, man, I'm just tired of, it's a role I play to sell books. It's like if I was an actor, I'd be like, you know, I am not Dr. Drake Ramore, okay? I'm just this person that plays him on a TV show. So I cannot diagnose your audience
to be a little confused. I mean, it would be really weird if I met a code rabbi and he wasn't a rabbi. That would freak me out.
But he is a rabbi, so it is very
interesting. That's what I understand.
Because I have met him, so yes, he is a rabbi.
He could have just been like putting it on the whole thing.
That would be disrespectful in so many ways, I think, Ed. If he was just putting it on, it would be the greatest con job ever.
It would.
So True North PHP. So we're going towards our final thing where, thank the Lord, because I don't have to have him tweeting at me or asking me stuff via instant message. Ed has a new job.
Yay!
Yay. Golf clap. So talk about the poor, deluded people that hired you.
So I'm working on a product called Legal Server, which is a like case management software.
Barely legal server?
Barely legal. Just turned 18 server. Actually it just turned like 12. I think it's been around like a little over 10 years. And
so almost legal.
Yeah, that got pretty gross. Actually, I really kind of regret saying that.
No, you don't.
Yeah, I kind of do, actually.
I wonder if this is going to be a sequence that's going to be edited out.
Nah, leave it in now. It's funny.
Leave it in. We'll fix it in post.
Yeah, fix it in post. So it's case management software for legal aid and pro bono organizations that nonprofits in general who do that kind of work for folks who typically don't have the money to be represented, you know, in the legal system. And so that's the product they make, and it's the company is is they're sort of branded separately, but there's an overall company called Network Ninja, which is probably not the name I would have picked, but it's been around since 1998 when it probably was cooler to be a ninja, and it didn't have all those sort of recruiter branding issues. Now I'm probably going to alienate everybody I work with. They're going to be mad at me for saying this, but so they make a couple of other products. They make another one called Collaborate, which is kind of similar, but that's for other sort of nonprofits to coordinate volunteer work and things like that. And another thing called Main Event, which does some stuff with some marketing or something that I actually don't completely understand, but apparently it's doing very well. We're all glad of that. So again, the thing I work on is Legal Server, and it's used by about 150 organizations in the country. And it's pretty cool. I mean, it's kind of cool to work on something that, you know, helps people, you know, get legal representation for folks who, you know, typically would not be represented very well inside the legal system. And I think that's pretty cool. I'm just kind of getting the application itself is massive and very, it's been around a long time, like 10, 11 years, right? So it's big. And it has grown organically, and there's a lot to do. And this is my third week. I'm in the middle of my third week, and I'm certainly still learning massive amounts. It'll take a long time before I feel comfortable, I think, with it. But it's a good group of people, and I'm excited about it. So I'm excited, but I'm not terrified of letting people down. So. That's kind of what's going on with it. And generally, I think it's going real well.
Awesome.
So there you go.
Awesome. Yep.
And the funny thing is that actually I found out about this job from a listener to the podcast.
Sweet.
I know. Pretty cool. And he was like, hey, we got an opening.
Is that the actual conversation? Hey, we got an opening or something.
Yeah, right. Something like that. Right.
Please don't hit me.
Please don't hit me. So we're not on the same team. He works on Main Event, I believe. But super cool dude. And it's really nice that we got to do all that stuff together. And so it's pretty neat that, like, Ryan, why couldn't I think of his name? Ryan talked to me about it. And it was just like, you know, I was evaluating a bunch of different, you know, possibilities. And he talked to me and it just worked out. Just, you know, it was a good thing. And they're based in Chicago, so it's not super far away from me. But I still work remotely. So, yeah. Other than that, it's kind of the same thing. I'm still working remotely, doing all that stuff.
Have you been?
Living the dream.
I was going to say, have you been to the offices in Chicago yet?
Nope. They tried to tempt me with Pac-Man last week. No, not Pac-Man. Pac-Man, Jesus Christ. Donkey Kong.
That's an important distinction.
Yeah, it's a very important. I know these things. Jeez. Donkey Kong. I don't even, Pac-Man came out of my mouth. It's so embarrassing. Anyway, but no, I haven't been up there yet, but I think most people are not in the office typically. They have lots of remote people, so yeah.
Then they are doing it correctly, and we applaud them.
Yay!
Awesome.
So anyway, that's what's going on.
Well, so I'm glad you found something, Ed. That's cool.
Yep.
Sounds like a good fit. As a one last little aside before we wrap things up, when you mentioned about like a large application that's grown organically over time, there's a sci-fi novel that I read in the past, and I need to reread it because it was really good, by this author, Werner Verge. I don't know if you ever heard of him. This book, it's called A Fire Upon the Deep, and it's a really weird, way out there sci-fi story. It also won the Hugo Award and the Nebula, which are awards they give out for science fiction books. And so one of the things it dealt with space travel, and also where a spaceship crash lands on a planet where the dominant species are like three-headed fox dog-like creatures that communicate telepathically with each other. And so one of the storylines is that the fox things find out that there's some weird tech on this spaceship, and one of the factions, they're kind of stuck in almost like medieval times, so they find out, wow, they have these weapons that we can use to wipe out our enemies, so they're trying to get onto the ship and steal stuff. But there's a side thing to it, whereas they're traveling around, where's it? Yeah, I think it's in this book. God, I hope I'm not confusing it with another one that he did. But when they're traveling around, there's engineers on the ship that have to figure out the software, and the software is like centuries old, and there's different layers. And it's interesting thing as they talk about having to shift through the layers of the code to try to figure out how to fix things on the ship.
Yeah, it's that's pretty accurate.
Yeah. Yeah, kind of interesting. I know it's a Werner Verge story. I'm pretty sure it's A Fire Upon the Deep is the name of the book. But if I turn out that I'm wrong, we'll I don't know, issue a retraction.
We'll fix it in post.
I'll add a retraction and an apology to the show notes. But I know it's Werner Verge for sure is the author. I'm pretty sure the book is A Fire Upon the Deep. I know I've read a few of his stories. I may be mixing two of them together here because it's been a while. But yeah, it talked about the engineer trying to decipher the code. And I'm trying to remember, there's something where they had to like... where the engineers had to augment their intelligence to deal with certain parts of the code. I'm thinking like they could temporarily make themselves super smart, or conversely super dumb to understand how something is supposed to work in the code base.
I can do that with caffeine and sleep debt.
Yeah, well. Yeah. It's funny. I find that I drink coffee out of habit. I don't find that I need a coffee to get going in the morning, which is kind of weird. Maybe I'm just not drinking enough coffee is probably what it boils down to. Maybe instead of one pint of a pint a size latte, I need to have like a gallon latte in the morning, and that caffeine will get me going. It could also be because I'm 6'5 and 260 pounds. It takes a lot of caffeine slammed into my system to do something.
Yeah, see, for you, a blood alcohol level of like, you know, 1.0 is probably what you need to get drunk.
I should tell, when you're up here in a couple of weeks, I'll have to tell you my Amy Winehouse story. It might give you a perspective on me and blood alcohol levels. But
fair enough.
I'll share the story with Margaret too. It'll be our little special Dev Hell only story. Yeah. Although I think I may have told it to other people, but it is kind of interesting. But anyway, I think we've reached the end. So I think this has been episode number 51 of the Development Hell podcast. I'd like to thank our guest Margaret Staples, Dead Lugosi, on the Twitters. If you want to start shouting at her due to her association with us. So Margaret, thanks so much for setting aside some time to join us today.
Thanks for having me. This has been a lot of fun.
It's been super fun. I think it's been great.
It has been good and makes me want to go to Strange Loop sometime.
Yay!
Yeah. We should thank our sponsors.
Yes, please, Ed, thank our sponsors.
I would like to thank our sponsors. Offload.io, which is this cool invitation-only thing, or you can request an invitation to get in up on it. It's like a marketplace for designers and developers to... find gigs and share things that they have for subcontracting, things like that. So that's a neato thing that you should get in there. Offload.io. You check that out. And then the other thing is Reeve. Is that Reeve?
Roe Avenue.
Roa.
Rove,
who are fine purveyors of PHP stuff, and they know how to program on computers, and they can use things to make forms and put things in a database, and then get out of the database, and they make that for you. Rove.com.
How sponsors keep giving us money, I have no idea. But we appreciate all the efforts that our sponsors put in, because the sponsors actually help to offset, despite what people think, this highly entertaining podcast does not happen for free. So thanks very much to our sponsors for helping us out. So again, this has been episode number 51. You can find every single episode that we've ever done on our website at devhell.info. Including posts for every single episode along with show notes. If you listen to us via iTunes, please rate the podcast. We use it to figure out whether we're doing a good job of entertaining and edumacating people. You can find us on Twitter at dev_hell. You can find me on Twitter. I'm Grumpy Programmer without the U. You can find Ed as Funkatron with the U. Our wonderful guest Margaret Dead Lugosi. She is criminally underfollowed on Twitter. Please sign up and follow her and boost up her follower account. So that's all for now. Thanks very much, and we'll be talking to you soon. Hopefully, we'll see some of you at True North PHP.
Good night, Internet.
Play my game.